Hello and welcome to the Claremont County Public Library's Book Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Laura, and today I'm joined by two librarians who are very passionate about audiobooks for kids, Kara and Amy.
Hello.
Hey.
So, Kara, would you like to kick things off?
Yeah, definitely. I picked three books that I love the narrators for. I think the narrator makes or breaks an audiobook. Some people don't like audiobooks. I think they probably just listen to a bad narrator.
I must have gotten bad narrators at first because I was like, I do not see what the attraction is. And then I got somebody who was just delightful. Moira Quirk. I don't know that she does children's books, but she does adult books. She was amazing. And I'm like, okay, I now have to listen to everything that she's narrated. So I'm with you 100%. Narrator is everything.
And the same way, I didn't listen to audiobooks for the longest time because I hated one that I listened to. But then once I got into it, now I have a favorite audiobook narrator for adults. I don't have a favorite for children. They seem like they're all over the place. You know, they don't do so many, but Cassandra Campbell reads a ton of adult fiction, maybe like historical fiction, because that's usually what I read, and she's fantastic.
I think with kids, people often jump to Jim Dale, who did the Harry Potters, and got a lot of people into Harry Potter and listening to audiobooks for the same thing. But yeah, there are a lot of audiobooks that are really well done. I agree totally. Narration can break a story or make it.
There have been some where I've listened to it and I've wondered if I really didn't like the story or I just didn't like the narrator because I was so annoyed by the narration.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not sure if I went back and read the book, if I'd like it or not, but who has time for bad books? So
exactly.
I didn't try. My first one is Skunk and Badger, which is by Amy Timberlake. It's illustrated by John Clausen. So if you're probably familiar with his picture books, he did the hat series, I Want My Hat Back. So it's definitely worth looking at the print version to see his illustrations. And then I would highly recommend combining it with the audiobook, which is read by Michael Boatman. He apparently does some acting. I hadn't really heard of him before, but it's a fantastic audiobook. He brings a lot of energy to it and has really distinct voices for each of the characters. And I just really like the way that he does the humor in the book. It made me laugh so much. I would highly recommend listening to that one. It's about 3 hours long, so I think it would be good for like a day trip if you were driving somewhere just for the day. It's kind of a quick little audiobook, but it has a really like modern classic feel to it. So it's your typical animal fantasy where they're acting as humans. The premise is that Badger lives in his Aunt Lula's brownstone, and that's where he does his important rock work. And one day he hears a knock at the door and it's Skunk, and he has no idea who Skunk is. So he thinks he's selling something and he tries to get rid of him. But he quickly realizes that Aunt Lula actually sent Skunk to live with him, which he would have known if he'd read Aunt Lula's letters, but he hadn't been reading them. So he kind of feels like he has to let Skunk in. So he tries to give him like a closet to live in. And so they really don't get along. They're totally different personalities. It's kind of like an odd couple for kids, but it's really sweet. And they kind of figure things out toward the end. And I was going to show an illustration from John Clausen's fantastic art. There's all these chickens outside the brownstone and you can see Badger's eye is really big. He's like, what are all these chickens? And it says, the landscape had gone chicken. The way that it's written is just fantastic. So in addition to seeing the illustrations, I would recommend getting the print book if your kid is learning to read or is struggling to read. That can be a really great way for them to connect what they're hearing with what they're reading and to develop their reading skills. Definitely recommend pairing them if you can.
It's also really great if you have dyslexia or other reading issues and comprehension issues to hear it. It helps the auditory learners learn it better.
Definitely. It's great for a lot of things. So I'm going to share, this is the very beginning of Skunk and Badger.
The first time Badger saw Skunk, he thought, puny, and shut the front door. Badger didn't normally shut the door on animals that knocked. But there was too much slick in this one's stripe, too much puff in his tail. Also, there'd been that grin, and the way he'd stuck out his paw, as if he'd been looking forward to meeting Badger for a long, long time. Badger knew what to make of that. He shut the door before the fellow got any ideas. "Not buying anything," he said through the keyhole. When the knocking continued, Badger added, "Ever!" Then he drew the bolt. and the double bolt, and latched the chain. Quartzite! Badger thought briskly as he padded back into his rock room.
So he's going to work on his important rock work, which the narrator talks about all the time, his important rock work.
That was absolutely charming. I defy an adult to listen to that and not giggle at least once.
I definitely think that one's for the whole family. I think everybody can enjoy that one.
Definitely. Mine is also another great one for the whole family. I'm a big nonfiction reader. And I actually found one that's called The Story of Classical Music. It's written by Darren Henley, and it's read by Marian Alsop, who is the conductor for the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. It was published in 2004, and it's about 4 discs long, and it's about 4.5 hours, but you don't have to listen to it all in one chunk. You can break it up. It is a 1,200-year look at classical music from the very beginning, starting with Gregorian chant and going all the way through the medieval period up to the modern classical music of the 21st century. Early 2000s when the book was published. It includes 150 excerpts from the music that it talks about. So it introduces you to each composer and it talks about their music and then it gives a brief excerpt of each music and the excerpts are about 9 minutes long for each one. Composers like Mozart and Beethoven get more examples, but the other ones will get like a song or two, but there's always an introduction of each composer, also where they fit in the timeline. There's 86 composers that are talked about. It is definitely Western European focus. That is my one drawback, is that it is not world music. It is definitely Western music and Western classical music, and there's only 2 females mentioned. It does mention Egypt with the fact that in the pictographs that they show playing flutes and, you know, things like that, but no printed music was left. So they just kind of skip it. And it's like, okay, this was in Egypt and now we're going to Western Europe. And that's where they focus. They do have some American composers and they're on disc 3. So it does the history of the timeline. So it's late when America gets into the story. There is a booklet that does include all of the pieces, all of the names of the pieces and the composers, and then also who's playing them. It is not all the same orchestra. There's a lot of individual people that are playing or different orchestras and different orchestrations. And then the booklet also includes a timeline that shows the music over the history, and it includes where the music falls in terms of world history. So you can learn a little bit about world history. It's very brief notations of world history. And some of that is also mentioned in the audio CD. Disc 4 is also a CD-ROM as well as a musical CD. And the CD-ROM includes things like how to read music. And it actually is fairly in-depth on how to read music. And it talks about tone and the staff and the name of the letters and how that all works out. Also, there's pictures of composers. There's world flags and their anthems, a dictionary of musical terms, and quizzes and games. But you don't need to use that to enjoy the CD. It also includes a printed text version of the story of the classical music if you wanted to follow along. And I have the brief introduction from the very beginning.
This is the story of classical music. Have you ever imagined what the world would be like if we had no music at all? Listen, quiet, isn't it? But don't worry, our story isn't quiet at all. It's filled with the most beautiful and exciting sounds ever made. And we'll be finding out all about the people behind these sounds and about some of the greatest pieces of classical music ever written.
What I love about it, too, is that it's a sneaky way to learn things without really focusing on that rote learning. And it's just fun. And it's a great introduction to all kinds of classical music. So that anybody from babies up through the very seniors of us would enjoy.
That sounds like a lot of fun. All right, Kara?
My next pick is maybe even more fantastical. So Skunk and Badger's Animal Fantasy. And then I chose The Trials of Morgan Crow, which is part of the Nevermore series. It's definitely a Harry Potter read-alike. So if you've gone through all the Harry Potter, like Amy mentioned, by the incomparable Jim Dale, and even if you've read through or listened to all of the series of unfortunate events. I know that's another huge series. One of my absolute favorite audiobook narrators of all time, Tim Curry, does a lot of those. And I mean, I could listen to him read the phone book, but
absolutely,
same. He's amazing. Some of them are read by Lemony Snicket himself, so that's kind of interesting where you've got the author doing some of them and then a famous actor doing some of them. So if you listen to all those or read all those, I would recommend Nevermore next. There's quite a few books in the series. I'm not sure if it's finished yet or not, but the first one is, you know, setting the stage for this world. So Morgan Crow is a cursed child. She was born on Eventide, which is the unluckiest day of the year. And it means that at the next Eventide, so when she turns, it's supposed to be when she turns 12, she'll die at midnight. But it ends up that it was an 11-year Eventide. So she finds out that she's going to die right away. She's shocked because everybody thought it was going to be 12 years. But this guy, Jupiter North, kind of swoops in and saves her. So he takes her to Nevermore, which is a magical city where she doesn't have to worry about dying. She just has to go through 4 trials to be admitted into the Wondrous Society, which is their prestigious group that she wants to join. So she either has to try to navigate that or go back to her real life where she's destined to die. So fairly easy choice. The trials are not easy, though. The other kids that are involved all have special skills. She doesn't have one, or at least she doesn't know that she has one. So she finds it pretty difficult. But I really enjoyed this one. I know there have been kind of a lot of Harry Potter read-alikes. I feel like this one is different enough that you don't really feel like she's trying to just play off of Harry Potter's success. So it's by Jessica Townsend, and then the books are read by Gemma Whelan. I had never listened to anything by her, but I thought she was really great. Anything with an accent, I'm pretty sure there. So she's got an accent. I really enjoyed how she read it. It's 11 hours long, so I think it would be good if you're driving somewhere far away, like a trip to the beach or something like that. But I think it's worth the listen. So this is when she finds out that Jupiter is interested in bringing her to Nevermore.
There was a noise, a very small noise. It was barely a noise, like a tiny whisper or rush of air. She flicked on her lamp, and the room flooded with light. It was empty. Morrigan's heartbeat quickened. She jumped up and looked around. The bed, threw open the wardrobe. Nothing. No, not nothing. Something. A small white rectangle stood out against the dark wooden floorboard. Someone had slipped an envelope under her door. She picked it up and creaked the door open to peek into the hallway outside. Nobody there. On the envelope, someone had written untidily in thick black ink, "The Wondrous Society wishes to present his bid for Miss Morrigan Crow again."
So that's Nevermore, the first book in the series.
I love that. She does have a delightful accent.
Yep.
All right, Amy.
My next one is also fantastical. It is the Unicorn Rescue Society, and the audiobook is books 1 and 2, and book 1 is called The Creature of the Pines, and book 2 is called The Basque Dragon, and it's a continuation story, obviously, and there are 5 total. They're available as audiobooks through Overdrive, but books 1 and 2 are combined on a CD at the library. The Creature of the Pines starts with Elliot Eisner's first day of school. He's starting at a new school, and it is a field trip day, which I can't imagine trying to start school and meet new friends while being on a field trip at the same time. His class is going to the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. It is based in New Jersey. And Elliot is walking down the aisle of the bus trying to find a seat where somebody looks friendly and approachable, but not too weird, not too different, so that he could actually try and survive his first day of school. And he sits down next to Uchenna Devereaux, and they quickly become friends as they are talking to each other about the field trip and about school. And as it turns out, she was a new student last year, so she kind of understands his plight. And the field trip is led by Professor Fauna, and he supposedly teaches social studies at the school, but he's also rumored to have a torture chamber in the basement of the school. And there's a lot of mystery about him. The kids are scared of him as well. Kind of the way I imagine it is in the Lemony Snicket is the character, the uncle, that sort of overbearing, frightening, but find out that he's not quite so frightening as he appears in this story. And Uchenna actually goes off the path to investigate some strange noises that she hears, and she screams. So then Elliot decides that he has to save his new friend because, you know, He's not going to let her peril. So he goes and follows her, and they save a strange blue creature who has wings. He's tied up in a balloon string, and so they rescue him. And as it turns out, that creature also likes Elliot's granola bars that his mom and grandma makes. Throughout the day, they don't mention it once they get back with the class and they're found again. They don't mention that they found this new creature. And somebody else on the field trip mentions the myth of the area and a Jersey devil and says that it's a blue creature with wings and it's a mythical creature. And they realize that they've seen and saved a Jersey devil. And this same devil decides that he's still hungry. And so he tries to get some more granola bars and he sneaks into their backpack and then gets lost in the park. The story continues. And that's where Professor Fauna steps in. And the question is can they keep the Jersey Devil safe? Can they find him again once he's in the park? Because the Jersey Devil also has an ability to go invisible in the sunlight. So you can see him and then you can't see him. He can choose to be invisible or choose to be visible. Also, why does Professor Fauna seem to have so many strange, mysterious things about him and know about him? And then the Basque Dragon, which is book two, is Elliot's second day of school. So they survived the first one in the first day, and then the second day of school is the Basque Dragon. Eucina and Elliot are recruited as assistant members of the Unicorn Rescue Society by Professor Fauna to fly to the Basque region of Spain after school to try and save a dragon. So they're sort of thrown into it. As you're listening, you'll learn who stole the dragon and why they stole the dragon and some dragon history as well as information on the Basque region. The question is will Professor Fauna, Elliot, and Eucina return to New Jersey before dinner? And will they be noticed that they are missing? The narrator does a great, great job of creating distinct voices for each character, which is really, really good because there's three strong characters in each of these stories. And the book was written by Adam Gidwitz, and it's read by January Lavoie. It was published in 2018, and it is four discs. It's about 4 hours and 45 minutes, so almost 5 hours. But it is book one and book two, and they're two very distinct books. So you could easily read one or listen to one and then listen to the other. Each one starts with the same sort of letter introduction, which I'm going to play now.
Are real. At least, I think they are. Dragons are definitely real. I have seen them. Chupacabras exist too. Also, Sasquatch. And mermaid, though they are not what you think. But back to Unicorn. When I, Professor Nito Fauna, was a young man, I lived in the foothills of Peru. One day, there were rumors in my town of a unicorn in danger, far up in the mountain. At that instant, I founded the Unicorn Rescue Society. I was the only member, and set off to save the unicorn. When I finally located it, though, I saw that it was not a unicorn, but rather a carcacha, the legendary two-headed llama of the end. I was very slightly disappointed. I rescued it anyway, of course. Now, many years later, there are members of the Unicorn Rescue Society all around the world. We are sworn to protect all the creatures of myth and legend, including unicorn, if we ever find them. Which I'm sure we will. But our enemies are powerful and ruthless, and we are in desperate need of help. Help from someone brave and kind and curious and brave. Yes, I said brave twice. It's important. Will you help us? Will you risk your very life to protect the world's mythical creatures? Will you join the Unicorn Rescue Society? I hope so. The creatures need you. Defende Fabulosa, Protege Mitica, Professor Nito Fauna. Nito Fauna, DVM, PhD, EDD, etc.
There is a lot of adventure in both of the stories. It is great for holding everyone's attention, even adults. I love the stories, but nothing is too scary in either book. And it would be enjoyed by anybody age 5 and above. So I think it would hold attention for anybody.
That sounds great.
It is.
Yeah, I like the sound of that one. That was one that was on my list and I never got around to it.
Yeah.
Is that one of those series where each book is by a different author?
Mm-mm. I'm thinking each of one is the one. Same.
Okay, I must be thinking of a different series.
Yeah, the first one is Adam Gidwitz. The second one is Adam Gidwitz and Jesse Casey. So I think he writes all of them.
He might
have additional help. And I have not listened to the other ones, but I'm excited to do so.
Well, speaking of not too scary, my next one is a little bit scary. So if you have younger kids, I wouldn't recommend it. Probably grades 3 to 4 and up. Or if your kids really like scary stuff. It's not too scary, and it's also pretty funny. It's called Demon Dentist. It's by David Walliams, who is a British comedian. The grown-ups might know him from Little Britain or other, you know, I think he does some stand-up. But he also writes children's books, and he does a fantastic job. And then he reads the audiobook. So I'm kind of fascinated by authors that read their own books as the audiobook. The one that I mentioned earlier where I didn't like it, it was read by the author. And I don't know, it's like maybe she just pushed to read her own story, but she was not a good narrator. But then you have people like Roald Dahl who have read their own works, which I just loved listening to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Arnold Lobel does the Frog and Toad books. So there are a lot of good ones where the author does their own work and they do it justice. So his book is in the book. It's paired with illustrations. It's the famous British illustrator, Tony Ross. And there are a lot of illustrations. So this is another good one to pair with the, you know, the book with the audience. So the premise is that the main character's name is Alfie, and he hates going to the dentist after he had a terrible experience quite a few years ago. So he has awful teeth, and his social worker's trying to force him to go to the dentist. And there's a new dentist in town. Her name is Miss Root, and she visits school and she gives all the kids toothpaste and candy. So it seems like there's something fishy going on with the new dentist. Around the same time, kids that are losing teeth and putting them under their pillows for the tooth fairy, instead of finding money, they're finding weird, creepy, crawly things like bugs and eyeballs and not nice things. So Alfie and his friend Gabs are trying to investigate what's going on in town, but kind of the whole story is leading up to what's going to happen when Alfie ends up in the dentist chair. So this is the prologue of the book. It is definitely scary, like you would kind of expect, but the rest of the book is pretty funny, I promise. So this is the prologue.
Prologue. Darkness had come to the town. Strange things were happening in the dead of night. Children would put a tooth under their pillow at bedtime, excitedly waiting for the tooth fairy to leave a coin. In the morning they would wake up to find something unspeakable under there. A dead slug, a live spider, hundreds and hundreds of earwigs creeping and crawling beneath their pillow. Or worse. Much worse. Someone or something had come into their bedrooms in the hours of darkness, snatched the tooth, and left a blood-curdling calling card behind. Evil was at work. But who or what was behind it? How could they sneak into children's bedrooms without being seen? And what could they possibly want with all those teeth?
So that's Demon Dentist. I have book talked that at schools, and kids come in and they're like, I want the book. So yes, he's great.
All right, Amy, you're up.
My last one is also for an older audience. It's definitely for like the fourth grade and up listener. It is The Tale of Despero by Kate DiCamillo. It's read by Graham Malcolm, and it was published in 2003. It is 4 discs long and about 3.5 hours. It's the story of Despero Tilling, who is a mouse, who lives in a castle and loves music and stories. And one evening, he does the unthinkable for a mouse, and he falls in love with the princess who lives in the castle, named P, and he talks to humans as well. And this leads to the disastrous situation where Despero is led away to the dungeon to be fed to the rats. And this is also the story of a rat named Roscuro, who lives in the dungeon, and he only wants to live in the light. He is tired of living in the pitch black darkness of the dungeon, and this dungeon has no light. The dungeon keeper has a rope tied around him, which is how he finds his way through the dungeon. And so Ruscuro, who's one of the rats down there, who has seen the light upstairs when a prisoner comes, and he's decided he wants to live in the light. And also, it is the story of Miggery Sal, who is a servant girl. She was sold by her father for a red tablecloth and a cigarette. Her owner does not treat her well, and he boxes her ears. She is described as having cauliflower ears because she's hit in the head so many times and she's hard of hearing. Miggery has a dream of being a princess. And so this story intertells all of those stories along with a few more. You meet Miggery's father, you meet the dungeon master, you meet P, the princess, and all of those stories intertell and intertwine. It is, in the end, a heartwarming story, but there is a lot of adventure, and it is definitely for an older audience. There's a little bit of a discussion about abuse. There's obviously death and torture because you are dealing with a dungeon. For the younger audience, it might be a little frightful. It would definitely hold everyone's attention, fourth grade and up, in a car for a trip. And there is nothing gory or violent in the story. It's just, a little bit heavier themes. And I have a little bit of the introduction of Despero.
The April sun, weak but determined, shone through a castle window and from there squeezed itself through a small hole in the wall and placed one golden finger on the little mouse. The other, older mice children gathered around to stare at Despero. "His ears are too big," said his sister Melo. "Those are the biggest ears I've ever seen." "Look," said a brother named Furlough. "His eyes are open." "Pa, his eyes are open. They shouldn't be open." It's true. Despero's eyes should not have been open, but they were. He was staring at the sun, reflecting off his mother's mirror. The light was shining onto the ceiling in an oval of brilliance, and he was smiling up at the sight. "There's something wrong with him. Leave him alone." Despero's brothers and sisters stepped back, away from the new man. "This is the last," proclaimed Antoinette. "I will have no more nice babies. They are such a disappointment. They are hard on my beauty. They ruin for me my looks. This is the last one. No more," said the father. "And he'll be dead soon."
How fun is that?
Exactly.
I love Kate DiCamillo. She's one of my favorites. Mm.
It's such a great story. It's so well told. It's so well written, as all of her books are. She's definitely one of my favorites, too.
Thank you both for sharing some amazing audiobooks. I know I'm going to be visiting the catalog to check some of those out. And just a reminder to all of our watchers and that they can find the show notes on claremontlibrary.org, and links to all of the audiobooks will be there. So thank you to the two of you. This is always so much fun, and I love hearing about all the great books and audiobooks suggest. Thank you to our viewers. Remember to follow Claremont Library on YouTube so you get all of our book talks plus additional great library-created content. And to our listeners, remember to subscribe to the Book Lovers Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Happy reading.